This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Three for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. Beyond the pitch, beyond the results, we're here to connect fans, getting them to embrace the highs and lows of supporting your club, because we're not just fans, we're a team. With 2 in 3 football fans having struggled with their mental health, we understand that life off the pitch can present its own challenges. That's why we're committed to ensuring you have the tools to stay connected with your friends and fellow supporters. Take a moment to connect with your mates. A simple text or an open conversation can make a world of difference. And if they don't respond right away, don't hesitate to follow up. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Green and White, brought to you by Argo Life. The last review pod of the season, and I have a feeling this one might be a good one. Plymouth Argyle have retained their championship status after a 1-0 win over Liam Rossini's Hull City. Never mind the Tigers, it was Joe Edwards who leapt like a salmon at the Barn Park end to nod home the only goal of the game, further cementing his legendary status. Scenes on the Barbican followed as fans and players alike poured into the pubs to sing a shandy. Oh, John's frozen. That's a brilliant place to freeze. To celebrate with a shandy or two. We're back live on Wednesday night to look ahead to next season. What happens, give our thoughts on the managerial vacancy, etc., etc. But for now, joining me tonight to discuss another wonderful day at Home Park, I'm going to go anti-clockwise. Ben, how's the head?
Oh, fine. I was very moderate. I was home very early. Family man, responsibilities, very boring. It's times like this I have to remember I love my family very much, and they bring them in the world to me, and I wouldn't be without them. No, yeah, I've got a little tipple for tonight, though, just to enjoy the hour or so we're here. Brilliant day. Feeling great.
Like that. Somebody who's not, I don't know, words. I'm still excited. Stand down. How's things?
Something about not in a white shirt.
Yeah. Yeah, unmute yourself and it will go much better. Brilliant.
Oh, dear. You can doubt my head. I haven't quite recovered today, can't you? Yeah. Very good, thank you, Aaron. I had a fantastic evening on the Barbican last night with friends, new and old alike, and made some new ones, I think, as well, on the night out. It was a fantastic occasion.
John, you were there. You weren't in Plymouth for the game, but you were in Plymouth for the celebrations. An interesting turn of events.
Missed the game, but couldn't miss the night out, so I was there. And it was absolutely brilliant. Just a fantastic night. Oh, hang on, sorry, one second. I think Hull have scored. I think Hull have scored. Oh, you know what? I'm not sure they have scored.
That's class. Not forgetting though, they were in the playoff places, John. Oh, look, he's here. Let's just chuck him straight in. And Finlay Allen, how's things?
Hello, all good, thank you.
Yeah?
Yeah, all good.
I think that's the first time I've seen Finn smile since we beat Leicester.
That'll probably be about right, yeah.
Absolutely buzzing. Sam, should we talk about those celebrations first? Any specifics you want to cover off? You're still on mute.
Sorry, I am. I'm still a little delicate today. Clearly, sorry about this. Yeah,
The first thing Sam said to us when he arrived is, "I didn't overdo it last night. I'm absolutely fine." Has then proceeded to not take himself off mute twice. So, I think you ducked the test too much.
Well, I didn't think I was too bad, but I think maybe I've still got that sort of brain fog hanging around the next day. Yeah, the celebrations, where do you start? There was the moment of jubilation at full time. I thought he was going to probably play on for another minute with how much time there were at dead balls during the 5 minute stoppage time. But to be honest with you, it was a bit generous to give 5 minutes at all. The amount of stoppages in the game really warranted it. So yeah, when the ball got booted upfield from the goalkeeper, about 10 seconds after the allotted 5 minutes had elapsed, you sort of saw the whistle go to mouth and you're thinking, is he going to give it another 10, 15 seconds? No, full-time whistle blew. Yeah, the ground erupted with celebration. The pitch filled up within about 20 seconds flat, didn't it? Yeah, incredible scenes of jubilation. And then seeing the players do their walk around again was a fully, fully well-earned moment. It's what it's all about, isn't it? Moments like that. You sit through days and days of absolute rubbish, games where we're never in the game, you know, matches where you want to go home and punch something, kick a wall, whatever. And then moments like that, just incredible.
Punch and kick a wall? Shouldn't do that. You will lose, Sam.
No.
You will
always...
This is why Sam doesn't have any furniture.
Yeah, he doesn't have a chair to throw, so...
Yeah, I've cut my fish for it too many times, that's why.
Joe's talking about the running order. I meant the celebration on the Barbican, but that's okay. Ben, why don't you give us an actual match run-through? Let's do it in a proper order, shall we?
I'm not sure I remember much of the match, to be honest. It's just sort of lost in a haze of sort of terror and adrenaline. I actually thought that Hull were nervous and they were quite toothless. But I also think that was due to some really quite excellent defending from Joe Edwards and Bali Mumba in particular, who were brilliant at closing down the flanks, which is where a lot of their sort of work comes. They kind of remind me a little bit of Schumacher's Argyle, the way they sort of work the flanks and then cut the ball back in a bit, obviously to a sort of slightly more... technical degree, maybe, because they've got players like Seri in the middle who can do wonderful things. And I think Jusnip and or Nance, whoever came up with the idea to sort of just stand off Seri, that was a bit of a master plan. He was sort of given, no one tried to go and take the ball off him because he's got such dancing feet. I think they just sort of said, look, let him have the ball. Just don't give him options to pass to. Don't give him easy lanes to sort of thread the ball through and, you know, make him go backwards or sidewards, and that kind of stymied them. I think it was a really good game plan. They had a couple of opportunities and Cooper was, you know, was excellent when called upon, but they seemed to lack a bite, and we had the bite that we didn't have in the previous two games, that sort of desire to go. And, you know, Stoke was, they were first to every second ball, they were first to virtually every first ball. They just, you know, they wanted it more, and I think the goal epitomized all day. We seem to be the team today who really wanted it more who really wanted it more. You know, Edwards had no right to win that header, really, but he's coming at speed. The defender can see him out of the corner of his eye, thinks he's likely to get it because he's the favourite for it. And Edwards just goes and gets it, goes and claims it, goes and makes it his own. And it's a brilliantly directed header, like a really excellent. I don't think the keeper's got much chance at all. So brilliant goal. And I think that sort of, you know, that was evident throughout the team. All day, I think Hull, whether it's nerves or whether it's the atmosphere that we managed to bring, it wasn't sort of quite as febrile as Leicester. I mean, Leicester was sort of like an ecstasy almost. That was just sort of the joy, whereas so much nerves around the ground that, you know, I don't think we were quite as noisy. But I think the team felt that they really must have felt the support. There was noise from all four stands again. So, yeah, I think, you know, it was I sort of felt second half like we didn't really they had a couple of periods, but I didn't really feel like we looked under the cosh. We always looked like we wrestled back control, and you expect, you know, Hull are going to have some periods of dominance. But I actually think I would have been very surprised if you'd have sort of dictated that was the way the match was going to go. I think even more pessimistic than Sam, I saw Birmingham doing what they did and I saw us not winning. But I didn't expect to see the attitude and the application that was there, but they really fought for it. and they really put in. That was the team we recognised from, I think, from earlier in the season, and especially from last year, that sort of determination to go until the end, to believe in each other and support each other. And they did, you know, did a really good job of doing that. It got us over the line. We needed to win in the end, and they went and did it. And, you know, they should be proud, that whole group of players, even though they've had, you know, some games where they've maybe fallen below the standards they would set for themselves when it's really mattered. You know, there are obviously, each game could be the last game if you could rotate the order around. But what, this was the last game. It was all to play for now. And that's they had to stand up and be counted. And I think to a man they did. You know, I think everyone tried, some maybe tried a little bit too hard or overthinking things. But I think there was no one there who didn't leave everything on the grass. And, you know, I think if we'd stayed up with a loss, and Birmingham had lost, we'd have taken that. But this somehow makes it so much more better. That's some grammar there, isn't it? This makes it so much better. You know, it just feels so much better going into the off season with a win, knowing we took it into our own hands, or that the players took it into their hands and did it. That just makes so much. You know, makes the feeling so much better. That, you know, that we won survival, not were handed it by others. It really makes a change to the vibe, I think, and, you know, a little bit more positivity going into the off season. Well, for me, anyway.
To be more pessimistic than Sam takes some doing. So, fair play on that one. Credit to you, Finn. We did a little Friday night nerves space, mm-hmm. in which you basically nailed us on to go down. Surely you're...
To be fair, I didn't I say that we'd lose, but Birmingham would lose also, or Norwich would do us a favour? I think that was...
I don't know. I think that's what we were going down, so...
Yeah, I didn't believe we were going to win.
Right. Okay. Well, anyway, how are you feeling after that one? Surely...
Oh, amazing. Absolutely amazing. yeah, just so relieved. It's the overriding emotion. It just meant, you know, just meant so much. I'm sure somebody will want to talk about him later, but Joe Edwards, like, he's an Argyle legend, right? And I know that word is thrown around a lot, but I think that's apt. He's put his name in, he cemented it into the history books, I think, yesterday. Because the guy scored the goal that won us the title at Port Vale last year. He scored the goal that kept us up in the Championship this year. And this year, he scored two goals. It's one against Birmingham and one to keep us up on the final day. You don't get two more goals that are more important than that, really, for how the season's panned out. So I'm just so glad. And like I said, I think it was, you know, Nick from PAFC Displays was saying, I don't care who scores on Saturday. I just got to have somebody score, but there was no more fitting man to score that goal. And I just think, just amazing, amazing. I'm so pleased. And I'm so glad that we can now have about at least 2 months of not really worrying about our goal. So, yeah.
To be honest, John, my running order was pretty weak anyway, and it's gone to pot anyway. So should we just talk about the man of the moment? Ben's covered Hull. We don't really need to talk about, you know, the game specifically, but obviously one man lit up the headlines, shall we say. Do you light up headlines? Don't know. Has his name up in lights, whatever.
The headlines.
He's on your chest.
He invited himself obviously into our goal history again.
Yeah. Joe Edwards. I'm struggling to think of a player or, you know, an individual that's had a better performance than that. Out for out battles, outplayed every single player on that pitch. You just seemed to want it more than anyone else. It was always going to be him that was going to score, wasn't it? Based on that performance,
he was virtually flawless throughout the game. The amount of times defensively where he just perfectly cut inside at the right moment to intercept was just incredible. Sorry, why are we laughing?
No, just You've just done a Joe Edwards there. You've just intercepted that question perfectly. Carry on.
Sorry, I thought it was open forum. Yeah. Well, I just to quickly, we'll let John come back in a minute about his performance yesterday. But just to come back to Finn's point about, is he now an Argyle legend? And I think the fact that legend is used too often has in itself become a cliche. But if we're going to look at this objectively, how do you define a legend? Because I think the main thing is, for me, it's got to be somebody who surpasses recency bias. Because people talk about Carey as being a legend, and I'm not sure as much as he was an iconic and much loved player for us.
Yeah, we've had a lot of discussions about this, and
we have. I'm not sure he quite meets legend status, just on the grounds that I think, is he going to be one of those remembered about in 20, 30 years to come? Possibly not. I think the Argyle legends, you can probably count on maybe two hands, the real bona fide legends. I think Roman Lario, Paul Watton, Jack Leslie, Sammy Black, Kev Hodges, Tommy Tynan, Paul Mariner.
Ladji Sakuna.
But I really think I really think that I'm probably forgetting one or two, but you know what I mean? It's not a great many. I think even the likes of Coughlin and Frio are maybe on the periphery of that category, but not quite fully in the category. Joe Edwards, I think, with that, has fully broken into that category now. He will be remembered in 20, 30 years to come as an Argyle legend. Let's just run by what he's been part of. He's been here 5 seasons now. Sorry, my throat's a bit dodgy, so if my voice is breaking, it's not out of emotion, but out of overuse. He's been here 5 seasons now, going to be a 6th at least. He's obviously had 2 promotions, one of which as a title winner, both of them effectively as captain, Gary Sawyer was captain for the first year, but still, 2 promotions, one of which being a title winner as captain, and then to score the goal that kept us up, particularly with obviously Birmingham winning, we had to win, to then score the goal and to score a goal against Birmingham in a 3-3 draw. So to score 2 of the most important goals of the season in a survival that's an incredibly big survival for the financial long-term future of the club, I think that just cements legend status probably more than anything else I can think of, really. I mean, what more do you have to do? So I think he's right up there with the Mariner, Tynan, Sammy Black, Paul Watson, that level. And I think long may he continue to stay at Argyle, whether it's a player, long term, maybe as a coach. But as the people in the comments have said, get that statue, Bill.
Just very quickly, before John makes his initial point, I do think it's about, like, you know, we were talking about Carey saying, well, you think that he's not, I suppose he was my player growing up. That was like the main.
I think he's one of those who's on the periphery, Tiff. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying he's not a iconic, beloved player. I think he's on the periphery tier, like same with Coughlin, same with Frio, but I don't think they're the very top tier, if that makes sense.
Yeah, but like it's the moments, right? So basically, you can add, so if you add the what he's done for the club in terms of being here since League Two, being an exemplary captain, but it's you add the moments to that. Then, I mean, he scored 3 goals last season, I think, and he hadn't scored until the Cambridge game. You know, and he scored against Cambridge, scored against Shrewsbury, and then scored the title winning goal this season. He just, like, to add to the fact he's been such a servant for Argyle, he also come, despite, you know, getting criticism for not being championship quality or whatever, and maybe there's a case to say that sometimes, you can argue both ways about that, but you cannot deny that the guy is probably one of the most clutch players we've ever had. When the pressure's on, he is the one guy. I remember seeing him on the pitch against Leicester when there was about 20 minutes to go and people were the players were flapping about a bit and being like, okay, we really need to hold on to sleep. He's telling everyone to calm down, you know? Yeah. He's just such a valuable asset. And I think, yeah, that on top of what you've just said, it's not only the fact that he's been such good servants, but the fact he also does seem to come up with moments when it most matters. Not many players can do that. Not even, you know, not even Morgan Whittaker, who's been our best player this season, was able to come up with a moment yesterday of that quality. So I think it just says everything about the mentality of the guy and why he's been chosen to be captain for so many years.
If I can just add, no, I'm just joking, it's my bit. John,
yeah, going back to the initial question about Edwards' performance yesterday before Sam ticked off basically every question that was due after that about his legendary status and where we're putting the statue. Best individual performance by a player for quite some time?
It's certainly up there. I'm trying to So we do match ratings in our group chats after each game, and it's quite rare for anyone to ever get a 10, but I'm pretty sure we did hand out a 10.
We kind of did a Lekeith thing of never giving anybody a 10 unless they really deserve it.
I'm a little bit more liberal with them than others, but even then it's once or twice a season occurrence. I think, if I remember rightly, Whittaker and Azaz maybe against Norwich both were sort of tipped into 10 out of 10. And I gave Edwards a 9 yesterday. So by that logic, probably not the best individual performance of the season. I'm sure there were some 10s in my Norwich rating. So, I don't know if I quite agree with the question as stated, but it doesn't really matter. I mean, he was absolutely phenomenal for all the reasons that everyone has said already. That headed goal is kind of a specialty of his, right? I think I've seen him score pretty much that exact goal 3 times now. Doncaster and Fleetwood away in the 21-2 season. Sam might remember those goals as well, although Doncaster one I'm not so sure about. He's got that kind of knack of being able to get in at the back post, and even though he's not, the biggest bloke, just sort of out jump, out want the defender, and score. So he's got that in his locker. I must confess, when I was watching it, I was sort of screaming at Callum Wright to not put that ball in, because Mumba was overlapping him down the left-hand side. And I was like, please just don't put in a floaty cross that they're just going to easily head away. Please don't. Like, lay it into Mumba. Let's get it into the box.
Why do you hate Callum Wright?
I don't hate Callum Wright. just call me imposter. Just kidding. It was a brilliant ball in, and good job. Impossible for him to listen to me, so I wasn't there. But it was, it was a fantastic cross, just beautifully hung up. And Edwards, I didn't even really see him initially. I was kind of like, who's that aiming for? And then suddenly Edwards was just kind of there. I think it's so fitting, that it was that combination of players that did it to keep us up for the reasons that Finn mentioned. But also, just because it was two players who scored, the two most iconic goals of last season when obviously, we had so much success and the vibes were so good after the last few months for, with both of those players to varying degrees kind of being frozen out under Foster. Certainly Callum Wright and Edwards, did feature under Foster, but not so much at the beginning. So, I think it kind of represented the kind of heart and winning mentality and spirit, that has built this success that we've had. And for those players to combine to see all that success, at least for another season, was just incredibly fitting. Two players who I think are not necessarily had the best seasons for us compared to other players. Two players who I think you could at times question their fit at this level, but both of whom, were absolutely brilliant yesterday, and Edwards in particular. I think, we had a conversation on this podcast a few weeks ago about Joe Edwards and whether, he should kind of go into a coaching pathway or whatever else. And I think I said at the time, I find that kind of whole conversation a bit disrespectful to him as a player, because he's not that old and he still has got it. And yesterday for me was the performance of a player who is not hanging up the boots or going on you can go on a coaching pathway and still play, of course, but not someone who should be talked about as a kind of fading player in any way. It was a brilliant, brilliant performance from someone who, it was a statement performance. He was absolutely superb. Agree with everyone else. I was going to say, I don't know if it's a trivia question per se, but I was trying to think of a season where someone has scored only two goals, but both of them basically combined being the difference between relegation and survival. And I did think of someone from a few years back, and I don't know if Sam, as the dedicated rememberer on this podcast, might have a clue as to who I'm thinking about. Not a player who will be going in the... who will be having a statue made of him, I think it's fair to say, but someone who did only score
a player
two goals.
Who scored two goals that were the difference between relegation and not. Yeah.
Jamil Matt?
No, well, I don't know. Hang on,
because the only season other than this that we've not kind of, in the loosest sense, narrowly avoided relegation was the 2020 to 21 COVID season. Before that. Okay.
Yeah.
08-09. 08-09, surely. Well, thing is, we came 21st. No, because we came 21st that year. But
there was a player who Chelsea women have scored. So sorry about the shouting in the background.
Norwich went down that year, but they did a double over us.
There was a player who got two goals only that season, and they collectively got us 4 points, which was the difference between survival and not.
No, go on.
Emil Mpenza.
Oh, yes. He got the equaliser at home to Charlton and, of course, the decisive goal at home to Cardiff. Yeah.
Yeah. So incredibly
actually an extra 3 points, but yeah, still got the difference, yeah.
So we can conclude, you know, the word legend might be overused, but Emil, but Joe Edwards has finally joined the pantheon of our gold legends that includes Emil Mpenza, and, you know, I think he can be very proud of that achievement. Aaron is gone.
If I could just echo some of what John said, like, not just, I don't think it just epitomizes our recent success, but kind of the club ethos, like a couple of players who, you know, even when we won the league with 101 points, we weren't the best squad, were we? Didn't have the best squad. We were never talked about. And we've never, you know, wherever we've been, we've always been the kind of underdogs. And those two players kind of epitomize that, I think, for this season. They were underdogs, weren't they? And I think that, you know, talking about Joe Edwards having time left, he's, you know, statistically been one of our better players this season, depending on sort of what metrics you're looking at. He does have holes in his game, but one of the better players that we've got this season, who, you know, if you go by the sort of like the, they're not objective, they're subjective, but, you know, if you look at the subjective ratings over the season, the different outputs give out, he's sort of like the seventh to ninth best player in the squad. So he's, you know, effectively in the starting 11 of a team which is at lower end of the Championship quality. So you know, he's definitely got potentially a couple of years to give. He's got, you know, he's a month younger than Kieran Trippier, and the idea that Kieran Trippier is like too old to be playing Premier League football is a bit of a nonsense. So the fact that the idea that Joe Edwards couldn't play Championship football at sort of like the bottom of the mid-table area of the Championship for a couple more years before either going to another club or deciding to go on a coaching pathway, like John says, I think it's a bit disrespectful that he's sort of kind of washed up at this point. I think he's quite capable of playing, even if it's not like an every week thing. He can certainly play sort of 30 odd games a season and do it very well.
There was one moment yesterday from his, I think, in the post-match press conference where, and it's something he said, you know, before, but it almost like genuinely choked me up a little bit, saying, you know, I know I'm not the best player, but, you know, I try. And I think it just, you know, it's such an honest thing to hear a professional athlete say. And maybe even
You're not going to hear many footballers say that. I mean, I know the stereotype about footballers being arrogant and all that, but generally that you don't get that, do you? That kind of humility, open humility, I guess.
Yeah, no. And yeah, you know, to Ben's point about his stats, maybe kind of being hard on himself. But yeah, I think it just epitomized like the honesty of yesterday's performance. Just quickly, by the way, someone has pointed out in the comments, for those people who will be listening to this without watching it, that Joe Edwards scored 3 goals this season, and we all forgot his goal at Ipswich. I think I was in a I was in a fracture
team. Yeah,
I was in a rage around that time.
So. I joined fourth top scorer, along with Mumba,
Luke Cundall.
Bundu and Cundall, yeah, that's it. So he's a joint fourth top scorer.
Yeah, as the resident stato, I'm very annoyed. I didn't remember the Edwards goal at Ipswich, and I've been repeating the two goals all season. Like, it was three.
Who is like?
Well, true. It was a. Yeah, like, no, it was a consolation.
So it's just. We lost.
Yeah, in my defence, I was in a tractor tinted fog of rage by that point. So, yes. That's why I forgot that one. I did think I was maybe forgetting one. But his other two goals, of course, phenomenally important. And by the way, that Birmingham result at home, which I think certain members of this podcast who aren't here today were extremely angry about at the time, because it was Wayne Rooney's Birmingham, was bloody important in the end, wasn't it?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
It was. Whilst we're on individuals.
Hugely.
Whilst we're on individuals, quite a few questions about Callum Wright. Simon Fisher, please can we have a Callum Wright pass appreciation section for that goal? I know you've already mentioned it, John, but obviously a player frozen out by he who shall not be named alongside Dan Scar. Anybody got any individual praise for anyone else that isn't Joe Edwards?
I thought the Callum Wright pass was brilliant, and it was almost like you say, he was frozen out by Fraudamore. But he was almost not up to the pace of the game, and it almost sort of did him good. It was like he stopped, because the game was quite frenetic, and it would have been very hard to sort of step in and just pick up the pace of that game. It was quite a high-paced game. And so the first few touches, he was a little bit sort of in a bit of a daze. He had not long been on, and he sort of got the ball there. And whereas someone might have looked to take one, two touches and then ping it either to, like, as John was saying, to Mumba or Square, he sort of took a little bit more time than perhaps someone who had been in the game from the start would have done. He just sort of stopped. No one came and pressed him. He looked up and picked out the pass. It was almost like a sort of perfect storm of situations. I think if he'd been on for an extra 5 minutes, he wouldn't be looking for that pass. He would have been sort of driving with more, you know, sort of felt more under pressure, trying to move the ball quicker. But it was, you know, it was pinpoint perfect, or at least Joe Edwards made it look pinpoint perfect. I thought Ballymumba, though, if we're going to pick someone out, I think he would have been up there. I mean, Gibson is really one of the most under, he performs 7 out of 10, 8 out of 10 every week. And we just kind of come to accept it from Gibson. And he's probably my, spoiler alert, he's probably my sort of forgotten man of the season. You know, he's Mr. Reliable. But Mumba yesterday was really back to his best. And I think he's had a raw deal for a lot of the season from the way he's been perceived into. But I think yesterday he did everything. Going forward, going backwards, he very, you know, I think he got like maybe done once in the, got turned and got passed, but he recovered. A couple of times he sort of that happened, but he got away with it, made the recoveries. Other than that, I thought he was pretty flawless in what he did. And he was, you know, he was a threat to them. You know, Bundu, a lot of Hull fans saying Bundu was, they didn't like the look of him until he got injured and went off. So as much as he's frustrating for us, you know, I think other fans appreciate sort of his mercurial abilities, and hopefully next season we'll see some more of that. But yeah, Mumba yesterday, I think, deserves a shout. I think he's been dug out enough times that we should give him his flowers when they're deserving. I thought he stood up to be counted in a season where he's had frustrations, he's had criticism that's some warranted, maybe some certainly unwarranted, and could easily have put his head down under that pressure and just sort of thought, here we go again, as someone who's sort of been knocked out of the championship or faced, you know, struggles at that end of the championship and is fledgling career, but did the opposite, stood up and showed that he still cares about the club and as a professional. Good going, Joe.
I was going to say just quickly on Mumba, I think that he obviously gets compared to the impact that Whisker has had, given that they had the same kind of club record transfer fee or thereabouts. And I think what people forget is that, like, even on a kind of off day, Mumba is what a £1 million championship player looks like. That is not a lot of money at this level. You know, every single week, you could pick out probably two or three players on the other team that we've played who cost £3-5 million, you know, and you would look at them and go, you just wouldn't have batted an eyelid. The amount would make you bat an eyelid, but you wouldn't have batted an eyelid at their performance. You would just think they were anonymous or, you know, not particularly good or even actively bad. And those are players that have cost often like three or four or five times what Mumba and Whisker both cost us. And I think that Mumba has suffered to a large degree, you know, by comparison with a player who has probably will go down as one of the greatest ever signings at this level in terms of value for money or, you know, impact to pennies. You know, he has still been an absolute steal for that amount of money, I think. And I think, yeah, I agree with Ben yesterday. He was one I was going to shout out as well. absolutely superb, and I'm really, really excited to see what he does next season after kind of bedding in this season. It would not surprise me at all if we're talking about him in similar terms to Whittaker, albeit of course his impact will be different because he is not kind of an out and out attacking goal scorer type player. But yeah, the other one I would like to shout out, whose name has been brought up on the comments at the bottom, is mine and Sam's new best friend Alfie Devine, who Sam and I both really like Alfie Devine, and I think even during some of the times where he has been criticized or not had too much of an impact, I think it's Sam and I have been fairly consistent in saying we think he's really, really good, and just young, being played out of position. And it is absolutely infuriating to me that we waited until the final day of the season effectively to play him in his actual position where he's really, really good, rather than kind of making him try to kind of be an Azaz replacement 10 type player, which he never really looked totally comfortable with. And lo and behold, he was absolutely brilliant. Progressed the ball incredibly well, really tenacious, just absolutely superb in that position. And if it's true, and Juzinip said it in the press conference yesterday, so I have to assume it is, that we're negotiating getting him back for next season, I think that is very, very exciting indeed, because played in the correct position, and given how young he is and how much potential these young players have to improve at a really rapid clip, I think he is certainly has the potential to be a really, really good player at this level. His technique is absolutely superb. I mean, he's so comfortable on the ball for a guy of his age. It's scary. And I'm not going to sit here and say he's been absolutely brilliant for us for over a period of months. It's been a rocky time, and I think that's had an impact on him. Obviously, the petulant red card against Bristol City was not a career highlight of his. But yeah, yesterday he was absolutely superb. And I think if we can get him back and we can kind of harness that type of performance in that type of position, obviously it will depend on the new manager and what their system is. But if we can do that kind of thing, I'm very, very excited by his potential.
I would agree with John.
He has the potential to be like Azaz-esque in his sort of like, the revelatory nature of his development. If we can convince him, or if Spurs can convince him, look, your future, if you want to go to your ceiling, is going to be in this position, and he embraces that, I think that he could potentially, maybe not in, it might take sort of the 18 months that it took Azaz, but I think he could sort of climb in a similar way. He's got all the his first pace to get to the man or get to the ball is like really long stride, really quick stride. He's got a lot of it's almost sort of like Vieira light, almost the way he can sort of do everything in the midfield there. I know that's a bit of a hyperbole, but he's got that kind of all-round ability, both to defense, defensively and attackingly. To sort of, he could be a traditional box-to-box midfielder in the sort that we don't really sort of employed anymore. But he really could be an exciting prospect, and
I agree with the Azaz comparison, and actually for all my many, many bad takes, one good take I had was I think I rated Azaz much higher than many of our fans last season. But even I didn't anticipate how good he would be coming back this year. And I think that, a lot of the criticism about not signing him permanently is kind of a bit hindsighty, as we've discussed in the past. So, yeah, like I absolutely... And I think, in Devine, he's obviously a very different player to Azaz, but I see a lot of the same qualities in terms of just, ball control, vision, calmness. I mean, I think the remarkable thing about Azaz always for me was the maturity that he played with for someone who, is so young. And Devine is even younger. And also, I think Bristol City red card notwithstanding, plays with, at least when he's on the ball, just this incredible maturity, right? Way beyond his years. And I think if we can get him back, that's something we should absolutely explore.
Just like to quickly touch on, I agree with John's earlier point about Mumba. He's somebody that's really excites me next season, because I feel like he's had a under the radar good season in general, and is very much a player because of like what John said. When he came in, he was same or similar money to Whittaker. They came with a similar sort of hype, and actually you could say over the whole season, because Whittaker didn't play the whole season, but also because Whittaker didn't start games for us until about October or November, that Mumba had the better season than Whittaker last season over the whole season. So I think in that, but like when he's not played, he's very similar to Danny Mayer in his role last season. When he hasn't played, we played a lot worse. And when he has played, even when he's had bad games, he's just still an asset to us in attack, because He's a player that teams know is going to cause problems. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to what he's going to do next season. I also think that Mustafa, friend of the pod, George Wood, put a comment way earlier saying about do you prefer Wright or Bundu? And whilst I don't want to go too much into like sort of bits on that, I do think that Bundu has actually had, he's not played that much this season, whether it be fitness or just not really being sort of preferred by Ian Foster. Like, he's had not like a number of moments of real quality this season, you know. Particularly, well, recently the Leicester game, the Sheffield Wednesday free kick was just like insane. And the move combined with Butcher in the Leeds Cup game, that, and the pass, the result, well, Butcher's pass, but Bundu's threaded through ball to Randall was absolute top quality. So, look, he might be a player that continues to struggle with fitness and things like that, and in which case, you know, maybe long term, he's not going to be a player for us. But I don't think we've got much to lose on him. And I'm really looking forward that if he can get some more games under his belt next season, I think he's a player that can, that I'm guessing there'll probably be a podcast in the recent, and then sort of, yeah, you know, coming weeks that we talk more in depth about individual players. However, I do think he's one of the players that we have on our books that has the potential to be a championship quality player.
Can I just quickly say, with Devine and Phillips yesterday, they could quite easily have just dialed it in. You know, it's a febrile atmosphere, real high pressure situation. They could be just going back to Spurs. You know, the rumours are we're in negotiations to bring them back, but they could just...
Sorry, Ben, are you suggesting that two people affiliated with Tottenham Hotspur Football Club would not be able to handle a febrile atmosphere or might have some kind of psychological size issues about bottling things?
Probably that is
very, very unfair. That's a very unfair association, if so.
Yeah, there's probably a word for it. But they're both young guys. What, 19, 18? Could have been like, do you know what? I've had a torrid time here. You know, they sacked off Ian Foster. But they both put in a real shift, you know, and they didn't really have to, but that shows commitment and professionalism and hopefully some kind of affiliation and affinity with the rest of the squad and the management team that's there. And, you know, I think they should take the plaudits for that. They both probably had for Devine, certainly, in my opinion, probably the best game, but best, you know, 90 minutes he's had for sure, if not the best sort of performance. And Phillips probably close to, if not as well. And they really deserve credit for that. And that's the sort of attitude that, you know, we love down here, isn't it? That we need. We need that sort of kind of stand up, be counted, buy in. So that's really, really positive. And kudos to them for doing that. And Marcus said earlier, and it's not this comment here, but asked about what's the point of getting, not, he didn't say it that way, but we're getting Devine in potentially and we haven't got a manager in place. But we're going to need probably 10, 12 bodies, aren't we? So, like, even if we want sort of like the core of our team to sort of be around a manager's philosophy, I don't think there's any harm getting bodies in right now. It's going to be a massive overhaul. So, you know, if we were getting in 8 or 9 players before we'd appointed a manager, that might be a cause for concern. But I think someone we've run the rule over, the coaching staff and stuff knows, I feel like that's a pretty decent bet to make.
So on Devine, going back to the initial point, still
we don't do that here, Aaron. We don't do that. We just meander.
No, exactly. It still baffles me that Ian Foster can bring in Devine and JB, players that he's worked with before and won silverware with, and still play them in the wrong position. That's absolutely fantastic. But I think we've covered enough of Ian Foster's tenure. We've got loads of questions coming in about boo to you, Sammy. Womp womp, as they say in Stoke. Where was I going with that? Don't know. Loads of questions that are coming in about stuff that Joe, who is in the background, people can't see him. The clamour for Joe earlier. He is here. He's just not showing his face. We'll cover on Wednesday night. We're doing a big What Next special where we'll talk about the future of Plymouth Argyle Football Club, who takes over as new, I assume it'll be a head coach, etc., etc., etc.
Can I just address that comment from Gaz there, which sort of said, if Hullard scored,
I'm not on comments, so yeah,
if, sure. if Hullard scored, we'd be down and not. And I think he means lauding with an A and a U all the players that came 21st. But that's the way football works. Like, you know, as John is keen of quoting,
and they didn't score because we defended well, right? And because we played well.
My auntie's had wheels, she'd be a cake trolley. You know, it's the old. That's the way we've had 46 games, and after 46 games, despite the referees, despite, you know, all kinds of machinations from Steven Schumacher and everything else, we've ended up with
Schumacher nations.
Yeah,
one of the highest points totals needed as well. Come to that to stay up.
51 points, and we're above the line. I mean, I'm not quite sure. You know, of course, we're gonna. I don't see how you could not laud a team with the lowest, probably. If not the penultimately lowest, the second lowest wage bill, et cetera, et cetera. You know, we've gone through everything it's been through. There's no other team that's really experienced what we've experienced this season. You know, I think that's a little bit to say, well, if they would have, you know, if Hull had scored, or, you know, we stopped them scoring, we defended well, Sam says. And we got done what we needed to get done. So I think it's perfectly, you know, fair to praise these players. And especially we're praising them, not just because they survived, but because they stood up and were counted. Oh yeah, I totally agree that the squad does need a rebuild. That's going to be a, like I say, I think we need at least 10, 12 bodies, but I think fair is fair. You know, it doesn't matter whether it's an inch as a mile, you know, to quote a very famous Oscar winning quality movie. It doesn't matter if it's an inch or a mile, winning's winning. If you don't know the reference, then you won't understand the irony. But you know, I don't think you can say, well, we were close, so we don't deserve to celebrate. I mean, if you win the World Cup final with a goal that comes off of someone's bum and then the post and then, you know, the keeper's back of the keeper's head, you've won the World Cup final. It doesn't, you know,
or if you win it on a penalty shootout like Argentina did at the last World Cup, it doesn't make it any less of a win. No. Yeah. Look, I think without wanting to go too much criticising what Gaz said, I think he has a point in one respect of the squad needs a rebuild. Yes, it does. Is this squad a squad that it's going to come mid-table, upper mid-table, push towards the playoffs and championship? No. We do need more quality in certain areas, and I don't deny that. But I do think that maybe not everyone, almost every player in this squad is good enough to keep us in this league, or at least good enough to be like a squad player. You know, I don't, you know, people like Callum Wright, Pegafuelo, even Houghton, they've not started every week, but they've all made good contributions this season. Houghton, especially in the first half of the season, was absolutely fantastic. So even Ben Wayne, who we have criticised on this pod, there's no getting away from that, has made very good contributions in some games. So, you know, I don't think there's anybody, there's maybe one or two, but yeah, you know, there's not many players who have just absolutely flat out been awful all season when they've played, have there? And to be honest, the ones that were that pretty much all departed in January, I think, didn't they? So, yeah, look, I think every player has made a contribution to staying up. We are where we are in spite of our budget, because as much as I don't want to sound like Ian Foster and talk us down, in purely in terms of budget, squad strength, we are probably lowest outright in terms of budget, and in terms of squad strength, probably second lowest, only Rotherham being weaker. So we have done incredibly well, because what we've done under Schumacher and yes, under Dusilip, is got our players playing to their maximum. We've got them getting the best they can out of them in a lot of the games, certainly from the defensive point of view under Dusilip, Schumacher more the attacking side. But, you know, they've both got more out of the squad than they probably had any right to. And I do want to, on the subject of thanking individuals, slightly hijack this point that Ben's making. And the individual I'd like to give some praise to, in the interest of all credit where it's due, is Neil Dusilip. I've given Neil a bit of a hard time on this.
You're going to say me then? I was starting to well up. Carry on.
I'll save that for the awards later, Aaron. Don't worry. I've given Neil a bit of a hard time on this pod this season, here and on back social media. Not in any personal sense, just in the sense of I think some of the decisions that have been made have not been good, and I stand by that, in all honesty. But no, and I stand by the decision, some of the decisions made have not been good. Mistakes have been made, not just by him, also by the club in general. But he has absolutely redeemed any mistake he's made, the way he's got this team over the line completely. He has managed this team very well in the last two home games, Leicester and Hull. I don't think the game management was so great at Millwall and Stoke, but if you look at it as a balance sheet, the negatives against the positives, this caretaker spell has been an enormous positive. We got 10 points out of six games. That's basically like nearly playoff form.
And also, if you extrapolate both of his caretaker sessions, which of course includes away at Southampton, home against Leicester, home against Hull, I think if you extrapolate that for a season, you'd be on for 66 points or something. So playoff form in this recent run. Plus
I don't think it's not quite that much. It's like 59, but that's still like mid-table.
Yeah.
Somebody worked it out, Sotty, but it's still like mid-table, yeah.
Yeah.
Also, the two games that we lost under him in this spell, you know, a lot of negative energy about those two results, including on this podcast. I think both of those results look a lot less bad in hindsight than they felt at the time. Stoke ended the season like a steam train, battered Bristol City yesterday more so than they beat us. Obviously, that result did hurt. Not going to get away from that, but you know. They ended the season in incredibly good form, and we know that when Schumacher teams kind of click in an attacking sense, they can do that to you. And Millwall won five games on the spin and finished 13th. So I think this idea that, you know, they were completely on the beach and all we had to do was turn up and you know, we were so bad that they just kind of put us out of our misery. I mean, I think aspects of that are kind of true about the game in isolation, but clearly, you know, that's not true of every other team that they've played, apart from Sunderland, maybe, who, just a bafflingly poor season and probably should rival Birmingham for worst decisions made, although it hasn't cost them to the same extent. But yeah, you know, apart from that, fantastic winning run to end the season for them. So obviously they've got something going as well. So to lose those two games, especially narrowly in the second case, I don't think is a huge kind of big failure that some people, I think, were blowing it up to be.
No. I want to just say that in the interest of full transparency, me and John, as well as Alfie Devine, that was alluded to earlier, we did also bump into Mr. Neil Dewsniff on the Barbican last night. And I did shake his hand and I did say, which I think wasn't being two-faced because I worded it quite carefully. I said, whatever's happened this season, Neil, you and Nance got us out of the, I won't say the next word, but you can imagine. And he shook my hand and said, thank you very much. We had a nice little chat, didn't we? And John also said thank you for keeping us up. And we went on our way. And I just want to say again, it was not easy to do what he did, keeping us up like that. Because like whatever mistakes have been made, he needed those points to keep us up. It wasn't like a case of, in a lot of other seasons, 45, 46 points would have been needed. But no, because of the high points that we needed, Birmingham picked up under Gary Rowett, Sheffield Wednesday were under fine form under Danny Roll. We needed to get to, well, technically we needed to get the 50 with our goal difference, but we needed to get the 51 to be a point clear of the relegation. And he did that through the choices he's made and the games he managed. Three wins out of six games and one draw is an incredible track record as a caretaker manager. So
also, fair with play, Neil Dewsniff. With four goals scored, he got 10 points.
Yeah.
How's that for efficiency?
Yeah, 3-1-0. Yeah, for a 3-1-0 win. And every one of those was an own goal as well, wasn't it?
Yep. Every time we scored, we got something out of the game. And given, you know, coming in that we have very clear issues going forward in the second half of the season, I think that is remarkably impressive. It's not like he came in and flipped a switch and we went back to playing shooey ball. You know, he came in and he had to adapt, you know, kind of what we were now into something that could win football matches. And he did. And I think
Dan Scar deserves a big shout out in that as well. Aaron's having a paddy because I've stolen his.
That's okay.
It's lovely to see you, Sandra. Lovely to have you back. I don't know if you've been lurking and not commenting, but we love that you're happy this weekend. On Nance and Dewsniff as well, though, they like the ecstasy that they seem to share. Joe, he's in the background. He'll let me know if he tweeted it, but he shared in the group, one of the group chats, a pic of them at full time and just almost on the point of tears. Like that, you know, they really do care. And I'm just distracted by Joe's comment there. I would absolutely love a My Argyle life with Nana Sandra Hardy. That would make my season complete. I had a tweet from Paul McGregor. There was a picture of my two favourite Twitter
characters, Agent Mickey Hassan and Rach Whitaker's partner, which I love to see. And so if we could get a Sandra Hardy Miyagi life, I think my season would be complete, along with us having stayed up. They both just seem so emotional, Juicenip and Nance both. Obviously, we know Nance sort of, we love him, and he sort of, he's always got the Green Army on side, but Juicenip's had to take a lot of flack, you know, and he still does. There's still calls for, he's still under a lot of criticism from some quarters, but he is, you know, you could see the toll and the effort he's put into it. And like I said, I think a lot of the tactical decisions yesterday were spot on as well. So, you know, he really does deserve a lot of credit. I'm sure he's, you know, as much as we've all been through the ringer, he's probably, you know, felt, as I said, mentioned earlier in the season, probably felt responsibility for some of the calls that haven't gone right this season. And you know, he's the one whose neck it falls on, really. If we'd have gone down, you know, I don't know whether it would have fallen on his sword or not, but there'd have certainly been vocal calls for, he'd have been the, you know, the pantomime villain of the piece, wouldn't he? You know, let's be honest, the way, you know, the fan base has been of late. So I think he deserves enormous credit to deal with all of that when, in fairness, he's done a great, you know, the body of work that he's presented, as John suggested, has been excellent over the time he's been here. And it's really good that he was able to do that for his own sake, as well as for the rest of us. I think he deserved that. And, you know, kudos to him. And hopefully he can enjoy a very busy summer, but it's certainly hopefully going to be more pleasant for him this way around.
I'm going to go with one positive and one negative, which is one positive. I've said this many times before, but now the season's over, we can really reflect on it. So I think just after Steam Schumacher left, Juicenip was asked in a press conference something about your target for this season. Has it changed? Blah, blah, blah. I don't know what the original question was. But his words were something to the effect of, we've set a target this season of 52 points because nobody's ever been relegated on 52 points. And
well, that's wrong if you said that, because Peterborough were back in 2013.
Well, you could only have used it that one. But you know, his point was that basically, you know, 52 points would be enough to keep us up. And you know, staying up has always been the target this season, and we managed to stay up. Now, to finish only one point behind that after all the things that's happened, that's a phenomenal achievement. However, you know, credit to Neil Juicenip, credit to Kevin Lanskerville, credit to Simon Hallett to some extent for making that decision and sticking to it, you know, and saying, no, I don't want to get Neil Warnock in. Let's just keep, we've got in the house, I believe in these guys to keep us up. That mission achieved. However, I don't want to go too deep into this because it might be a discussion for another time, but yeah, they must also take responsibility for the wrong decisions that were made and how we managed to get so close to being relegated from the position that we were in. It's completely escaped my mind. Basically, the fact, oh yes, this is it. We must make sure, kind of going back to what Gaz said earlier, that with the turnover of squad, we must make sure that we don't have a Rotherham type season next season. That's important to me. And that's, again, discussion for another time, but I just want to add some balance to the fact, you know, it's still not all well done, Neil Juicenip. It's thank you for getting us out of the proverbials, you know.
Yeah, I wanted to, Finn alluded to it, but I was going to mention, you know, that the people running the club deserve praise for sticking Juicenip and Nance Gaville in, because it would have been the easiest thing in the world to smash the glass box marks Neil Warnock. I mean, you know, he has gone on record as saying that he would have accepted it. Obviously, we don't know exactly what was going on behind the scenes, but the way it's been talked about by Hallett and others suggests it was not really something they even, well, I'm sure they did consider it, you know, but it doesn't seem like it was kind of a close call. So to just, after a season, you know, where halfway through the kind of process that we all trusted let us down, let's be honest, to have the people running the club still trust the process enough to say, you know what, you guys got us here. You know the squad, you know how to kind of get a tune out of them. rather than the kind of easier option. Is phenomenally good judgment. And of course, it might not have looked like phenomenally good judgment if Leicester or Hull had just got one goal, if one bounce had gone a different way. But, you know, as Ben said earlier, ifs and buts doesn't really matter. We got to the objective. And I'm not massively convinced that Warnock would have done better and could, you know, plausibly have done worse in hindsight, given that I think there are real limitations there that can't quite be overcome just by like pure spirit, new manager bounce, you know, kind of vibe. But that was already important. But Juzinic managed to harness that. Juzinic and Bandanskov managed to harness that anyway, while at the same time just being so tactically astute in those games where they needed to be and getting absolutely the most they could out of, you know, a squad that, as we've discussed, is in some ways limited and was on honkingly bad form. So yeah, I think that, you know, everyone involved deserves credit for that decision making.
Yeah, and you have to as well. Like, if you're gonna criticize for bad decisions, you surely, logic dictates, you have to praise for good decisions, because you live and die by them. You know, it's like we said about the tactics at Millwall and the team selection. comment on screen. People are going to have to start watching the YouTube and not listening to the podcast, aren't they? You know, if we're going to criticise the appointment of Foster, he should not be named. We also have to say, well done for making the right decision in the second. All right, Aaron, I'll shut up. I'll shut up and let you ask a question which we're surely going to cover anyway in our rambling.
I mean, you've already covered it. The next question, I was going to move on to some of the questions that are coming in. Obviously, I've already mentioned the questions that come in on Twitter. We're going to save them for Wednesday night when Joe's at the helm. I might be here. We don't know. We'll soon see. Who cares? Nobody cares about the host anyway. They only come to listen to you lot ramble. There's a couple of questions that Joe has starred in the background, so we'll just go through some of those. Sam, I think you've already covered it. But I'll go till I die.
Well, that is a time it did happen. I think
For the audio listeners, Sam. I'll go till I die asks, questions for the Boffins. When was the last time a team got relegated with 50 points? Now you may continue, Samuel. Thank you.
Birmingham yesterday. It's not a very good question, is it?
I am just verifying, but I believe it happened possibly in the 16-17 championship season, I believe I remember seeing. I'm just checking that now. Yes, in the 16-17 championship season, Blackburn went down with 51. Ironically, Birmingham stayed up on the final day, I think, that year. Yes, they did. Blackburn went down with 51, and they went down into a season of League One managed by Tony Mowbray, of all people. So it's a little interesting parallel for you there. So that's the last time it happened. Blackpool went down with 51 in the 2016-17 season. But the most anyone's ever gone down with is, of course, Peterborough in the 2012-13 season. Darren Ferguson's Peterborough went down with 54 points, which is an absolutely remarkable figure to go down with.
Maybe they should have won some more then.
I'd never want to watch football again if that was my team, if I went down with 54 points.
I'm going to give you an even more interesting. They were on 54 at the start of the play on the final day. They lost on the final day, and at one point on the final day, they and Huddersfield were both winning. In the live league table, Huddersfield were going down with 57 points in the live league table on the final day, but because Peterborough then threw their lead away and lost, they didn't.
This has just horrified me that next season we may need 57 points, and I don't think I needed that right now, and the day after we just secured our...
What is so absurd about this is, for the last three seasons, we missed out on the playoffs with 80 points, which is very, very unlucky, if not totally unheard of, right? But like, that's virtually unheard of. Had to essentially get 101 points to win League One last season, and would have had to get, what, like 97 to go up at all, which is ridiculous. And this season, we've had to do it the hard way again, you know? So just wish we could have a season where all the benchmarks that we're looking for.
It's good. We know this squad's got a mentality. Like, nobody can question the mentality of the core of this squad. Like, we've built a mentality around the club that we can do this. And I feel like, yeah, throw it at us, you know? Like, we're going to have to, if we want to achieve stuff, like, we are going to be the underdog, like, in the championship. Like, regardless, like, we could have American investor come in tomorrow with lots and lots of money, and we're still going to be a smaller a club at this level than Southampton or Leeds, or, you know, so we're going to have to do that anyway, you know?
Definitely smaller at this level than a Rotherham.
I need to apologise publicly to Nick of Argyle Memes fame, who he came up and said hello to me yesterday as I was waiting outside the loos for my mate, and said, "Hi, I'm Nick," and I completely just blanked on who he was and was just really rude to him and was like, "Hi, mate, who are you?" sort of thing. So I wanted to publicly apologise to Nick for blanking him, and thank you, Nick, for helping me sort out Stoke away. Next, now I know what you look like, I will buy you a pint starting next season when I see you in the Devonport. But I thought he was owed a public apology after being such a hero for me in the season. Why not use this platform that I have to do it publicly? Anyway, carry on, Aaron. Thanks for the
platform that you have. Okay. Oh, nice. All right, then. Dave Simpson asks, what a header, by the way. The best headed goal you've ever seen at Home Park? Trigger had many, but that's the best he's ever seen. I'm sure some of you have seen some good headers.
I would like to nominate, off the top of my head, Scott Sinclair against Derby in the FA Cup, which was a game that will live long in my memory as someone who has many family members from Derby, including Derby fans, and also just because the atmosphere was absolutely brilliant that day and it got us into an FA Cup quarterfinal, and also because it was a brilliant cross from David Norris, if I remember correctly, and a really, really good header from Sinclair just kind of steered into the back of the net from a player not, you know, best remembered for his heading ability. So I will say that as my nomination.
Yeah, it depends if you're going for the importance of the goal or the quality of the header. If you're going for the quality of the header, then I don't know. Are there, like,
best headed goal. It doesn't say anything else. Best headed goal.
Unlike Joe, I can't look past Hartley just because of the absolute ecstasy that followed it, even though it was a rubbish header. Oh, well, it wasn't a rubbish header, certainly.
He had to kind of wrestle with his man and get the jump on him and force it over the line. I wouldn't say it was a rubbish header, but yeah, it was not. It didn't quite happen.
Let's not forget the initial header bounced onto Ender Stevens' head, which then bounced back off onto Hartley's head and back into the net. So there was an aspect of fluke to it, as amazing a moment as it was. But I think Joe's put it in the comments. The one that combines quality of header and importance of the goal was the Mickey Evans against QPR in 04. I was just 10 years old that day, watching it with my dad in block 6, as it was back then. And I remember in slow motion the ball coming in from David Norris, the Mickey Evans jump, perfectly timed into the net, which secured promotion. And yes, Richard makes a very fantastic point in the comments that the Peter Hartley header and the Joe Edwards header yesterday were, of course, against the same keeper, which was Ryan Allsop.
No relation that I know of. The best header at Home Park, not a goal, was Zach Rodden, of course. That was the best headed assist.
I would just like to say, one of my favourite headed goals of all time, not at Home Park, other than the Hartley one, is Neil Trotman in the last minute against Mansfield in about 2014, because that was just iconic. I just love that. Just like, because it felt like we hadn't won away and we hadn't scored. We hadn't won away in ages, or we hadn't scored in a late goal in ages. And yeah, it was just, that goal just lives in my memory. I just remember listening to that in my room on the radio and sort of being ecstatic as like, what, a 10-year-old or something.
Question I'd like to ask comments on, if people want to put the comments in. Was Mickey Evans, is he underestimated because he's sort of like a Plymouth lad and sort of had that kind of happy-go-lucky persona? I feel like he is. I want to know what other people's opinions. I think he's actually a pretty quality striker and did a, you know, really good job at a good level. So
I mean, whilst I do remember him, I was only aged about 8 to 13 remembering him, so my analytical skills at that age were possibly not the finest. But I do remember him being brilliant. I do remember him just... I do remember him being a great target man, great link-up man, brilliant in the air. Didn't get many goals, but got a lot of important goals. When he did score, it was very rarely like a consolation or you know, the icing on the cake in a 3-0 win. Usually not. It was normally a big moment, big goal for, again, another one who's very much on the periphery of being a club legend, to refer to the early discussion, even if not quite fully there. But he was, yeah, he was fantastic for us. And I think maybe doesn't quite get the appreciation he deserves.
I'm very surprised, Sam, that you didn't come up with a Callum Wright header, seeing as you seem to just bring up Shrewsbury away at every possible
time. That wasn't that home park, was it, Aaron?
Oh, quite.
To be fair, I did bring up Neil Trotman, which also was my home
Finn's
park.
Fault. Finn confused me. That's, yeah. I don't really remember anything.
The crazy pilgrim, Ash. Are we finishing yet, gents? Got an exciting F1 race coming up. Mate, it's Miami. It's not going to be exciting, but we will finish in time for the race. Don't worry.
Oh, will we? Okay. All right. Sam's in charge now. Right. Argyle fan has asked, was Joe's the most lucrative in Argyle history? I hate to come back to you again, Sam, but you were discussing the financials earlier. So,
The new TV deal was estimated at about sort of 8 million or so, I think. The increased solidarity payments in the Premier League are about an extra 4 million. So that's 12 million before we even get started calculating. And obviously, let's not forget the increased revenue we get from being in the Championship. Let's not forget the extra leverage we're going to have if we're selling big money players this summer. The fact that we're going to be a Championship club selling rather than a League One club. I think that goal was easily worth 15, 16, 17 million to Argyle. I really, really do. Because let's be honest, and I know that we're kind of veering into the what next pod, which I'm not going to go too far into this, but we're probably going to sell Whittaker this summer. There is a chance we might sell Cooper this summer, maybe one or two others. The level of revenue that's been coming into the club as a result of that is absolutely enormous. So yeah, I think it probably was the most lucrative goal, because I think staying up this season is more valuable for us financially than going up was last season. So actually, yeah, I'm going to say yes, it was the most lucrative goal in our history.
Although, of course, if we hadn't gone up, we couldn't have stayed up.
No, but we could have gone up from League One. So that's also hypothetical.
Are you sure the most lucrative goal in our history isn't Ryan Hardy's equaliser versus Cheltenham to take us to the famous final at Wembley last year?
No.
Okay, nice. All the other questions are about stuff that we'll cover on Wednesday. And I'm happy to call it a night. You guys want to go and watch some silly little cars around a bloody track, so...
I don't.
Good. Well done.
Can I just have a little closing speech, if I may?
If you may. You've not spoken enough on this pod, so I think you definitely should have your own 20 minutes. Go on, Sam, take it away.
It will be 2 or 3 minutes-ish. I just want to say that it sort of made me realised last night with the scenes in the Barbican being as great as they were, seeing the squad out there having an absolutely fantastic time. And as I said, me and John, we did meet Alfie Devine, and he was a pleasure to talk to, very sociable, really nice chap. I did not sing the Alfie Devine song to him myself, but other people did, and I might have joined in incoherently.
What song are you going to
make? I'm not going to sing it. My throat is gone. I'm not going to sing it.
Aaron, you're a little bit devastated. You're a little bit devastated, aren't you, that you couldn't come down and...
If people want to see it, they
regale the squad with all your tunes that you write.
If people want to see the Alfie Devine song, they know where the internet, where on the internet to find it. It was just great. Taking aside the players, I bumped into people I hadn't seen in years. I bumped into someone I met in primary school. I bumped into someone I worked with 4 years ago. I bumped into numerous, friends, old and new. And that, to me, that feeling of community, that getting together, yes, of course, that wouldn't have happened if we'd gone down. But in a way, that really highlighted to me that it was about the journey more than the destination. I look back at this season, and the things I remember most isn't just the on-pitch action, although there have, of course, been some fantastic moments on the pitch, but it's the moments with many of you guys and plenty of others having drinks pre-match, socialising, chatting after the game. Ultimately, football is great to watch purely on its own merits of the sport, but also what it is, it brings people together and it brings communities together. And that night on the Barbican was a fantastic example of that. And long may it continue. And yeah, bring on another season in the Championship from that.
And just very quickly, I'd like to say thank you to everyone who's watched us continually this season. Your support has been amazing. So that's just personally from me. Yeah, we hope you enjoy everything we've got coming over the summer and next year.
Literally pointless, me being here. Couple of things.
Anybody else, anything else that Aaron might say?
Yeah.
Someone
you guys can tick it all off.
I live in Norwich.
Brilliant. On
EFL rules actually stipulate that.
Brilliant. I feel sorry for the people that have to listen to this back on Spotify or all your major podcast platforms, which you can subscribe to us on if you'd like to. Not sure why you would, but you can do that.
Don't forget to like, comment, subscribe. That's something. Don't forget to like, comment, subscribe. That's probably something he was about to say. Anything else?
Brilliant. Yeah, as always. I have just retweeted that video. So if anybody wants to find Sam down absolutely off his rocker, chanting about Alfie Devine, he can now find that.
No.
And anyway, as Finn has already touched on, as this pod comes to a close, as does our season, I just want to say on behalf of everyone at Argo Life, but actually Finn's done it on his own, so just on behalf of me, nobody else, a huge thank you to all the listeners, contributors, opposition fans, everybody that's got involved in the comments, sharing the pod, read our written content, etc. the lot. I'd like to say a huge thank you from us all, because without you, we'd all be sat on our computers, in Sam's case, stood at our computers, and it would all be pretty pointless. The fact that some of you seem to enjoy it is just a huge bonus. Mentioned it enough, we're not going anywhere just yet. Starting on Wednesday night, we'll be back live to ask what next, discuss any potential retain list, which surely should be on its way, and talk about who we'd like to see come in as manager. The group chat has been pinging off with random names. The more mental the name, the better, in my opinion. As well as lining up a two-part review of the season, the way Sam and John talk and Ben, it could be a 3-4-5-parter, as well as talking about any comings, goings, managerial movements, etc. We'll be live to react to that, I'm sure. And not forgetting our own end of season black tie Argyle Life awards due.
Is there a dress code for that?
It's a black tie.
We should definitely have a dress code.
Tie event, Finn. There is your dress code. I'm starting to talk as much as Sam does here. Thank you. Before we go, please like, comment, share, subscribe, follow us on all of your social media platforms. We're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. Find us on all your major podcast platforms. Subscribe to us on YouTube, etc. And if you don't want to hear from us until next season, that's fine as well. Appreciate every single one of you. Thank you. Good night. That enough?
My girl wants to
party with divine.
My girl likes. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.